Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully. Today I'd like to talk about some, let's call it maybe good news, movement on the front in Congress. And really, if we're going to make any progress anywhere, it has to come from the federal government primarily. State and local stuff absolutely helps, but without the federal government having their finger into the game big time, we're not going to succeed. So a couple things. There are some bills being introduced into Congress that put a price on carbon. I'll talk about that in a bit here. And the other part that, yeah, I got to say is good news is that the Republican Party is starting to realize that they have a constituency amongst the young primarily who are concerned about the future of the climate, and the Republican Party is trying to come up with a coordinated message on what the Republican position is on climate change, which is refreshing in a way since typically for the last several years at least, we haven't seen any acknowledgement from the Republican Party that that's worth talking about at all. As I say that, I always want to make the distinction between the Republican Party and folks who may consider themselves conservative or Republicans. About 30% of Republicans by polling from Yale Climate Communication are concerned about the future of the climate. So just because a person's a Republican doesn't mean that they don't have concerns about our ecological future. So I'm going to talk a bit about some of the bills that have been introduced into Congress that do put a fee on carbon. And I got to start off by kind of going over how that works. And full disclosure, I think that a price on carbon, especially a national price and a price that includes border controls, is probably key to us managing the CO2 pollution issue. In itself, it's not going to solve the problem, but it's a great step forward, and it has the advantage of having some attraction for both progressives and for conservatives, and I'll talk about that in some depth too. So basically, the way a price on carbon works is that the producers of a fossil fuel or the importers of a fossil fuel pay a fee. And in my mind, this fee is totally justified in a couple ways. The primary one being that you can call it a price on pollution. Fossil fuel industry has gotten massively rich by in part dumping off costs of their production onto the general public, and that cost is showing up in terms of global warming, climate change, and health. And of course, we know that people who are least well equipped to deal with those issues are the ones that are most impacted. Once we talk about a price on carbon, the question that comes up right away is, okay, what are we going to do with the money? Is this just another government boondoggle? Would be the first point that some concerned folks would bring up. And one of the key proposals, one of the key features of some of these proposals is that the price on carbon gets redistributed to the general populace on a per capita basis. And that would mean that a household of four people would get somewhere around $2,000-$3,000 a year to help them adjust to adapt to a more expensive carbon environment. Of course, the whole idea is to make it more expensive so that clean energy, which doesn't get this kind of subsidy that's implied with fossil fuel industry having the right to pollute, that the clean industry, solar, hydro, wind, is playing on a more level playing field. And the fee will encourage people to move towards greener things as time passes by. It'll give businesses an opportunity to make adjustments to gradually increasing costs over time. So a couple of the bills that are in Congress. Most recently, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, who's from Rhode Island, and Brian Schatz from Hawaii introduced a bill called the Save Our Future Act. It's comprehensive legislation that is intended to dramatically reduce emissions and protects environmental justice in coal communities. So let's talk about environmental justice for a second. This is something that our society, our culture, hasn't paid much attention to in the past. When changes have come along, people have just had to deal with it. Coal country has been most affected by the transition that's already underway to cleaner energy forms. And I think that most people would agree that we can't just dump
those people who have relied for generations on the coal industry. We just can't dump the problem on them and just tell them to figure it out. And Senator Whitehouse's bill takes into consideration that transitional climate justice issue head on. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby, and while this is not a Citizens Climate Lobby bill, the leader of Citizens Climate Lobby, Mark Reynolds, has said that the Save Our Future Act would place an ambitious price on carbon, and it would also address longstanding environmental justice issues, just as I sketched out for you there. And it's an important, could be an important part of a transition to a clean economy. So for this bill and other bills, I encourage you to do some research, communicate, especially with our senators regarding price on carbon. I believe that Patty Murray, who we've had some conversations with, is open to talking about a fee on carbon, but not exactly the direction she's headed. Of course, one of the alternative directions, which seems to be where the Biden administration is headed, is the direction of regulation and goal setting and requirements placed on industry. I think the reason that the Biden administration is headed that way at the moment is simply because the public tends to conceive of a price on carbon as just another tax. I think there's some schooling to be done on that score. I think if people know how much more effective a price on carbon would be in reducing carbon emissions, then they would change their perspective on that. So there's another bill in Congress. It's the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And there's a caucus that's supporting that. I guess we should say co-sponsors. 10 more House co-sponsors have recently signed on, which brings us close to 70 co-sponsors for that bill. And it does just exactly what I'm talking about in terms of putting a price on carbon. Now, one of the really interesting things about a price on carbon, and by that I'm speaking specifically of a national price on carbon, is that we know that fossil fuel pollution is a worldwide problem, and there are other significant producers of fossil fuel emissions besides us. China comes to mind, of course. That's where in any conversation about a price on carbon here in the United States, the issue of a border control comes into play. And very simply, the way that works is that if fossil fuel or fossil fuel containing products are brought into the United States, then a fee is charged on that importer, the purpose being that it would be unfair for U.S. manufacturers, producers to be paying a fee for carbon, whereas they could import carbon from outside the United States and not have to pay a fee. It would give, of course, a tremendous advantage to producers outside the United States and thus the border adjustment. Well, not only in terms of fairness and leveling the playing field, but there is a ramification of a border adjustment that is, I would say, intriguing. And that is, consider another country, let's say Saudi Arabia, and that their imports into the United States have to pay a fee. That fee is paid by them, and that money goes to the United States. Well, not something that most governments would be happy with, and certainly not the businesses wouldn't be happy with it. So the solution is that legislation that sets a fee on fossil fuel emissions in the United States also sets the fee on the imports. Those fees are only collected if the country that's doing the import in the United States does not have a fee on carbon. So if they, once again, Saudi Arabia, for instance, if they put a corresponding fee on their own fossil fuel carbon products, then they would not have to pay the fee to the United States. They'd keep the fee at home. And in that way, the fee would spread around the world, at least in countries that are significant producers of fossil fuel emissions. So interestingly enough, the pressure in this regard is not coming from us here in the United States because, let's face it, we're laggards in the world of addressing climate change. The pressure is coming from the European Union, which is considering this kind of fee that we will have to be paying to them if we don't have a corresponding fee. And ironically, the former Soviet Union, Russia, is considering the same kind of thing. I think that we can see in the next few years a waterfall effect of fossil fuel price around the world, where each nation is under pressure to put their own fee on to avoid having to send money to other governments. So here's a quote from Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin. He is the spokesperson for their energy policy. He says that the draft law that they have in the Russian Duma at the present time is part of their international obligations within the Paris Agreement, and it's their new climate policy. So Russia is seriously considering a fee on fossil fuels, and we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that, as is the European Union. I mentioned earlier that a price on fossil fuel emissions is probably one of the very best and most effective, easiest to implement steps we can take to limit fossil fuel emissions. And that's not my thinking. If you ask just about any economist who's taken a close look at the global warming situation, you will find that there is support for that idea. And once again, of course, it's not the only thing we need to do, but it's an important thing. So putting a price on fossil fuels has another very distinct advantage from my perspective. Background here is that all up and down the political spectrum, from let's say progressive to conservative and everything in between, there are opinions on climate change. And those opinions range all the way from, don't worry about it, to, I'm alarmed and we got to do something right now. And the steps to be taken, generally speaking, are a reflection of the person's political ideology. Now, we know what gridlock is. We've been living in gridlock for years, really, and I don't see that gridlock is getting any better. Gridlock, especially that comes from a perspective where the ideologies are banging into each other head on. So that can certainly happen on the climate change front. And I got to say that any proposal from anywhere in that spectrum that is ideologically oriented and the supporters of that position take a hard line against any others, that approach is just not going to work to get us to where we have to be. So we have to be looking for something that is at least somewhat, at least reasonably acceptable across a good swath of the political spectrum. Okay, given that on both ends of the political spectrum, we're never going to make those people happy, and we can argue forever like people in a sinking boat arguing about what it is we should do to save ourselves, and the argument goes on forever until everybody's, let's say, not saved. And that's the situation we can find ourselves in if we stick with our ideologies and can't find some pathway to talking to people with radically different ideas. So here's the charm of a price on carbon. Because households lower on the economic scale are going to, relatively speaking, be receiving more in terms of a percentage of their income from a carbon fee, recalling that the fee is distributed equally to everybody on a per person or per family basis, that the system has a built-in climate justice aspect to it, which is important. It's important to me, and it's important to lots of folks, and it's built in without having to build a bureaucracy to pass money out. Some of the conversations I've had from representatives of economically disadvantaged communities points to some dissatisfaction with a bunch of outsiders coming in with money, but saying, okay, here's how you got to spend it. And this carbon fee and dividend approach addresses that resistance. Okay, on the other hand, if conservatives are concerned about anything, it's about the size of the government. And that explains, to some extent, their resistance to regulations on just about anything. Now, personally, I see a place for thoughtful, well administered regulations, but that's just me. And I have to acknowledge that there are lots of people in the world that see things differently than I do. And once again, if we want to find a solution, we can't just rigidly cling to our own preconceptions, our own idea of what would be the best. And for conservatives, a price on carbon allows market forces, i.e., individuals and businesses making their own choices about what they're going to spend their money on. It harnesses that in the service of reducing fossil fuel emissions. So once again, I encourage you to talk to our senators in particular, to your representative in Congress, urging them to take a look at these carbon fee and dividend bills that are showing up in Congress. There's one other thing going on. I've seen news reports, you probably saw it also, that there have been some meetings, some actual meetings amongst Republicans talking about developing a platform, if you will, that addresses the whole issue of climate change. This is a positive step. Do some Googling on that and find out what those folks are talking about if you haven't picked up on that. Okay, that sums up some of my thoughts for today on a carbon fee and dividend approach to addressing our fossil fuel pollution. I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email anytime at John, J-O-H-N, at citizensclimatelobby.org. And also check out the citizensclimatelobby.org website. That's cclTacoma.org. And find out what's up locally here. It's a good outfit, a lot of good people. If nothing else, some good friends and some good conversation. So check it out. In the meantime, I'm reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.